So I just want to quickly go over a little bit of what we did yesterday. So yesterday we started with verse 1. And everybody remembers why Manashiksha is important? Manashiksha is important because it is a what? Anybody remember? It's a padati. Excellent. What is a padati? A step-by-step guide. Yes, and it's particularly a step-by-step guide to attainment of spontaneous devotion in Vrindavan. And Bhakti Vinod tells us that Rupa Goswami tells us what to do, but it's Raghunathas Goswami who tells us
how to do it.
How to do it. Yes, it's basically a manual of the development of the psychology and the consciousness of bhakti. And verse 1 starts with attachment, right? Everybody remember that? An attachment to holy name. What else? Gayatri mantra. Guru. The Dham. Process of surrender. And the Dham. Okay, and in addition to attachment, in the first verse, we also have to make an endeavor. We have to make an effort. And our running theme is one should always... Yes, yes? Always give up pride, yes. Sada dambhan hitva. And that's our running theme of Manashiksha through today. By tomorrow, when we start tomorrow, we will have no more pride. All right. This is our... theme. Okay, then verse 2. Again, remembering this is step by step. How do we give up our pride in verse 2? We give up acting according to what and what?
Vedas.
The Vedas, yes, and the words, exactly. Anybody remember? Good guess.
Pious and impious deeds.
Pious and impious deeds, dharma and adharma. And it is so interesting, Krishna is so interesting. I'm scheduled to give the Bhagavatam class tomorrow morning. And guess what it says? Give up what? It actually says give up dharma. It actually says give up dharma. And it says have attachment for the process of surrender. That's tomorrow's verse. Can you believe that? Now, who engineered that? I didn't engineer that, I'll tell you that. Okay, so give up this dharma and adharma, which we talked about in terms of our what? When we talk about that in terms of giving up dharma and adharma. Well, dharma talks about duty, but when we say giving up dharma and adharma, we're meaning giving up them as identity motivators. Remember we talked about that? You were here. Okay. So talked about being a very dharmic person, right? Very good person or rebel person, and having that as our motivators for action. So giving that up. That's a kind of pride, isn't it? I'm a very good person. Or I'm a rebel person. So one can have this attachment and effort, but still have that kind of identity. And what do we talk about doing instead of this dharma and adharma identity? Being Krishna's what? Thank you. Secret agent, right? Being Krishna's secret agent. Everybody remember that? Yes? No? I'm a terrible teacher and none of you remember that. Okay, you remember that? Got that? Okay, so instead of this, becoming Krishna's agent, usually a secret agent. Then also in verse 2, we talked about the proper relationship with what two personalities? Guru and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We talked about seeing Mahaprabhu as the same as Krishna and Guru as Krishna's friend. Excellent. First class. All right. Verse 3. Okay, verse 3, we went to a deeper level of giving up pride, and that was to be what? Remember we had a slide about Rukmini? We talked about being... Anybody remember? We talked about Mukunda. We talked about Mukunda, Lord Chaitanya. We talked about Rukmini writing to Krishna. Ready to wait for how long? As many lifetimes, life after life. And that's a deeper level of humility. Because one can have this attachment, but still have a materialistic identity. And one can have a spiritual identity, but have impatience. So to become patient, even life after life. And then who are we supposed to follow? If we want to attain spontaneous devotion, who do we have to follow? Which Goswamis? Sanatan. Sanatan, Rupa, and? Swarup Damodar. And some of you may remember how we talked about Swarup Damodar taught the path of spontaneous devotion in two forms. Anybody remember those two forms? Internal and external. Right? Taught the external form to Vakeshwara Pandit, internal to Raghunath Das Goswami. This book is about the internal. And we talked about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, right? And that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta decided that he was not going to teach the external form, only the internal form. And that people looking for the external form will therefore think that spontaneous devotion is absent. The external form is visible, the internal form is invisible. Okay. So this is what we went over yesterday. And then I told you today that we were going to go over what? Huh?
Obstacles.
Yes. Today we're going to do some heart surgery. So if that wasn't what you signed up for, just... pretend you're getting a very important text on your phone. And now, it's particularly significant, and we did mention this yesterday, that before dealing with obstacles, we have this initial qualification and initial attachment. We're not just starting with obstacles. And this point is very important when we think about the nature of bhakti as compared to the nature of the other systems of yoga. That the other systems of yoga start right away with yam niyam, right? That's the very beginning of the other systems. However, in bhakti, that is not the case. Karma yoga starts with dharma, not with getting rid of a dharmic identity. But bhakti starts with attachment. And it is on the basis of attachment and because of the reason of attachment that we make progress to get rid of obstacles. And we talked about how, even in this world, when you love somebody, you are more willing to get rid of your problems. Isn't that a fact? Okay? When you're attached to someone, when you love them, when you care about your relationship with them, that attachment is a motivation for changing myself and getting rid of my problems. So that's what we're starting with. It's that I love Krishna more, I love Guru more, I love the process of surrender more than these other problems that are holding me back. So it's a path of attachment from the very beginning. And it will be difficult to go through these obstacles, again, because this is a padati, if one is not taking care of these things first. So if we have just some dharmic or adharmic identity, we're not patient life after life, we're not following Rupa and Sanatan, we don't have any attachment, then these obstacles will be very difficult for us. And I would suggest that if we find ourselves thinking obstacles are impossible, that we should go back to these beginning things and see what our foundation is. Because if you try to build the second story of a house and you don't have a good foundation, it's not going to work very well. Again, I have warned you yesterday, and I will warn you again today, that these obstacles are very intense. Raghunath Das Goswami's language and metaphors are crude. Please do not blame me. I am just the messenger here. And I will tell you that if you make it through today, tomorrow is just sweetness. Tomorrow is just complete sweetness. All right, are we ready? Everybody ready? Okay. So Raghunath Das Goswami says, yes, you have attachment for Guru and the holy name and the holy places. You're making an effort. You don't identify as a very good person or as a rebel, but as Krishna's agent, you have the right relationship with Lord Chaitanya and with Guru. You're patient life after life, following Rupa Sanatan, Swarup Damodar. You've already awakened some feelings of attachment for Krishna, or at least you desire to do so, but what are you talking about? Okay, we can sing together. Asad Varta Vesya Visrijamati Sarvasvaharini Kata Mukti Vyagrana Shrinu Kila Sarvat Magilani Api Twa Twa Lakshmi Pati Ratim Ito Vyomanayani Raja Radha Krishna Swa Rati Mani Dao Twamba Jamanaha. O mind, abandon the prostitute of mundane talks who plunders all intelligence. Do not listen at all to the stories of the tigress named Mukti, liberation, who devours all souls. Moreover, also give up attachment to the husband of Lakshmi, Sri Narayana, who only leads one to Vaikuntha. Instead, here in Vraja, serve Sri Sri Radha Krishna, who give one the jewel of their own love. So what are we talking about? Srila Prabhupada would say that a well-dressed fool is only recognized when he? Yes, when he speaks. And I'm sorry to say we've seen this, especially in some recent American politicians. So, you know, in a gathering like this, we're talking about Krishna, but as soon as we go out, what are we talking about? What we talk about, what we write on social media, what we listen to, reveals our real character. We can say we have attachment to the process and to Krishna. We can say that we have all these qualities of surrender. But what we talk about reveals our actual state of consciousness. Soon after I started teaching Manashiksha, a devotee called me about some service. And for half of the 2.5-hour conversation, I realized that he was glorifying himself and criticizing others. Now, I'm sure that this devotee did not have a conscious awareness that he was doing that. But when I got off the phone, I started thinking about, I wonder what I talk about. I started really listening to myself, and I was surprised at how much I would do gross and subtle self-glorification. Criticism of others is also a kind of self-glorification, isn't it? Right? I'm so much better than those other people. So this is your first homework, a home fun assignment. So try tomorrow, every half an hour or so, make a little note, what am I talking about? I have found that even in the Hare Krishna movement, often we do not talk very much about Krishna. In fact, the only service I've had in the movement where I talked a lot about Krishna was when I was a teacher of very young children. And this is, I think, one of the most well-kept secrets in the Hare Krishna movement, that if you really want to be absorbed in Krishna, then teach children aged 2 to 5. Because it's all you have to do, you know. You don't even have to worry about math and science. And you can just say, Krishna, Krishna, let's all play, going to the forest. Uh-oh, there's Agasura. That's what you can do pretty much all day long. So if you really want to be absorbed in Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, just try working with young children. It's very serious, actually. But, you know, are we absorbed in talking about our own egos and our family and our money, or, you know, the sports teams and the economy and this and that? Or are we talking about things related to Krishna? Of course, we have to say other things related to our work, or, dear, did you remember to put fuel in the car, or something like that. But as much as possible, we should be talking about Krishna. And we should have friends around us who like to talk about Krishna. Now, not only does that reveal our character, but also what we talk about creates our future. Krishna says, yam yam vapi smram bhavam tvaja chante kalevaram. Whatever we think about, whatever our consciousness is on, that determines our future. And that's particularly by sound. You may know the whole universe is created by sound. What was that sound? And everything is still making a sound. Even this, the electrons are moving, they're vibrating, and they're creating some sound. And my dear friends, we are creating our future through sound. So sound indicates presently our state of consciousness, and it creates our future. Raghunath Das Goswami has a very heavy metaphor here. He says, if you are speaking about mundane things, it is exactly like enjoying with a prostitute. Now, a prostitute may appear to be attractive and to promise pleasure and love, but what does she really want? Money. And here, she's taking his wealth right out of his heart. Now, people who want to enjoy with prostitutes, they wake up one morning, they have no money, maybe they have no health, perhaps their family has left them, perhaps their reputation has left them, perhaps their job has left them, and perhaps the prostitute has also left them. And if one is engaged in trying to enjoy this prostitute of mundane sounds, one day we will wake up and our bhakti will have left us. So that may not be so surprising, but then Raghunath Das Goswami says, don't talk about liberation. He says, talks of liberation are like a tigress that will eat your very self. So of course this implies to impersonal liberation, but beyond that, what does talks of liberation mean? If I say, oh man, Kali Yuga is so bad, I can't wait to get out of here, I'm suffering so much, when is Krishna going to take me home? That is talks of liberation. Now we can understand why mundane talks are a kind of pride. These are all kinds of pride. But why is talks of liberation a kind of pride, and why compared to a tigress that eats ourself? If I'm focused on liberation, then I am focused on my own freedom. It's a kind of pride. It seems very spiritual because it's liberation, it's mukti, but it's my liberation. That's the antithesis of love. What do we do in the marriage ceremony with the cloth? We tie it. Even in America, we talk about tying the knot, which is interesting because in American wedding ceremonies, they don't tie anything. But this concept of binding yourself to someone when you love them. When Krishna said to Rukmini, okay, now you're free to go, was she very happy? Was she happy? No? Any of you who are married, so if this evening your spouse says to you, now you are free to go, I hope you will not be happy. Yes? When Radharani said to her associates, may all bound creatures be liberated, they started to cry because they wanted to be bound to her in love. If we want to have love for Krishna, of course, we have to be liberated. Love can only happen on the platform of freedom. Love cannot be forced. But if our focus is on our own freedom, then we cannot really have love. Therefore, if we have these attachments and we're trying to surrender to Krishna, and at the same time we're talking about liberation, It'll be as if the essence of ourselves is being eaten. Why a tigress? Well, tigers are very beautiful, yes? Some people keep pet tigers, okay? Not in this country. In some of the Arab countries, I know, the sheiks, they keep tigers. Oh, such a beautiful tiger. Nice tiger. Oh, such a nice tiger. And then one day, the guy doesn't show up to his job. So just like that, we're talking about liberation, we're talking about liberation, we're talking about liberation. And one day, our bhakti is eaten. Now this kind of desire for talks about liberation, Bhaktivinoda says it's like a prisoner who wants to get free by committing suicide. Bhaktivinoda also says that these talks about enjoyment of the world and liberation are like two witches. Perhaps even more surprisingly, Raghunath Das Goswami says, hey, not just liberation in general, but don't even be attached to the husband of the goddess of fortune. Don't even be attached to Lord Narayan. And I find it very significant that he calls Narayan Lakshmipati. Bhaktivinoda comments that the residents of Vaikuntha want to enjoy the opulences of Narayan. Now, I have a friend who told me, Urmila, I like having very wealthy friends. I said, well, isn't that a little inconvenient because you can't keep up with their standards of living? You know, maybe a little awkward. And he said, no, it's not like that. He said, when they go out on the ocean in their yacht, I get to go too. When their kids have a party with bouncy castles and clowns and magicians, you know, my kids get to go to a fancy party too. So that is the mood of the residents of Vaikuntha. They love Narayan. It's not that they don't love Narayan, but they want to also enjoy his opulences. Whereas in Vrindavan, that's not the mood, right? Narayan and Krishna are the same person, but when the gopis see Narayan, they say, where is Krishna? The residents of Vrindavan are not there for the kalpavriksha trees and the chintamani dust. They're there simply out of love. So what is the cure for the prostitute and the tigress that represent the pride in speaking? Now, this is a very gross kind of pride, because when my speech is about my own enjoyment and my own liberation, other people can hear it, yes? And I may think I'm a great devotee or whatever, but they can understand immediately, oh, this person still has this kind of pride. The cure, Raghunath Das Goswami says, is to get a jewel. Now that we know the power of jewels, they can affect your consciousness, they can cure disease. What is this jewel? And this is our painting for this verse. This is a jewel of loving service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And why does this jewel cure the problem? Because this loving service is not selfish. Radha is just trying to make Krishna happy, and Krishna is just trying to make Radha happy. They are concerned for the one they love rather than for themselves. And when we become absorbed in this mentality, then we simply want to talk about them and their service rather than what we're doing with our ego or our own liberation. So the first obstacle in getting rid of pride is sound. Pride in sound, which is represented by the prostitute and the tigress. And our cure is a jewel of loving service. Okay, maybe just turn off the light for a second so we can see this painting, and then we'll go on. So this is the jewel of loving service of Sri Sri Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. And you can see if we are engaged in meditation on that, if we're engaged in a mood of that, then we would simply want to talk about that. We would just want to talk about the nature of Vrindavan. We would want to talk about the nature of the relationships there. And naturally, we wouldn't be very interested in talking about the things of this world, whether material enjoyment or sense gratification. or liberation. Okay, you can turn the lights on. Lights on. So, Raghunath Das Goswami says, this is wonderful. You have attachment for all these things in bhakti. You're making an effort. You're getting an identity of Krishna's service. You have the right relationship with Lord Chaitanya and with Guru, patient life after life, and you have this jewel of transcendental sound. Imagine carrying around this beautiful jewel that then fills our life with transcendental sound. He says, that's very wonderful, but what are you doing? Okay, ready? Asak chesta kasta pradavikata pasha libiriha prakamam kamadi prakata pata pati vyati karai gale badvahanyeham iti baka bhidvartma pagane kuru tvam putkaran avati sayata tvam mana ita. And before we read this, do you guys call these quotation marks or speech marks?
Quotation.
Okay. You see, they have things here in quotation marks, and that needs to be read with some expression. Okay, so let's read this together. While here on the revealed path of devotion, I have been attacked by the hideous gang of lust, etc., who have bound my neck with the troublesome, dreadful ropes of wicked deeds. I am being killed. Cry out piteously like this to the devotees of Sri Krishna, the destroyer of Baka. O mind, they will save you from these enemies. This is a problem in every religion. People who speak nicely, we finished with the obstacle of speech, we have this jewel of transcendental sound, but their behavior does not match their speech. What two demons in the Bhagavatam spoke very nice philosophy? Hiranyakashipu and? No, Kamsa, yes. Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa. They both spoke very nice philosophy, but their behavior was not up to the standard. So Raghunath Das Goswami gives a metaphor for this problem. He says these are like thieves on the highway of bhakti, the shining or revealed path of bhakti. So I think here in Melbourne, we don't have highway robbers, do we?
A few,
huh? In India, you still have them in many places. Certain roads you don't go on after dark. I know in South Africa, they tell you, they say, be very, very careful whenever you're stopped at the robots. You know what the robots are in South Africa? The traffic lights, yes. And people get their cars stolen. When you're stopped at the traffic light. I know one devotee whose son was murdered, who was driving his car, stopped at a traffic light. The guys came with guns, and they shot him and took his car. So these are the highway robbers. You're on the shining path of bhakti. One thing I'd like us to remember here very clearly, again, this is a padati. What Raghunath Das Goswami is saying here about the prostitute of mundane talk, the tigress of talks of liberation, these thieves, these are for people who've already done the previous verses. He's not writing this about materialistic people. He's not writing this about materialistic people. If you've come this far, you've already completed the first four verses. Everybody clear on that? Yes? So it's not talking about ordinary people. And this is the path of bhakti. We're on the path of bhakti, and we have these thieves. I hope the gentleman will excuse me that the artist who illustrated this verse chose to make all of these thieves as male. So this is lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, which of course includes fear, and madness. Now their ropes are woven out of wicked deeds. If you look very closely, or those of you who have a book, tell you what page it's on. So you have a book with you? Some people in the book with you? So you have a book with you. This is on page 102. And you can look there carefully at the picture of the ropes. So here you can see that the ropes are actually made out of wicked deeds. They're not ordinary ropes. So what does this mean? This means the things that we know are wrong and we do them anyway. I shouldn't watch that, and we watch it. I shouldn't eat that, and we eat it. I shouldn't do that.
No.
And we do it anyway. Arjuna talked about this problem in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter. The first time I read the Bhagavad Gita, I was a university student. This question was at the bottom of the right-hand page. Why do I do things seemingly against my will as if forced, that I don't want to do, that I know are wrong? And what was Krishna's answer? It's lust. So Raghunath Das Goswami is saying the same things. He said it's lust and his friends. And what are they doing with these ropes? These ropes are around our neck, and we're like a dog on a leash. Oh, can you do that? Okay. All right, now there's a little secret about this, and I want to stress that I'm not talking about anybody in this room. I'm only talking about people who are not here. So you can please give this information to anybody who did not attend this seminar, but it doesn't apply to anybody here. Whose lust and anger and greed and fear are this? It's the person's. It's as if a person has hired thieves to rob them and pull them around by the neck. So why would anybody do that? Think about it. Why would anyone do this? And this is because people think, without these, I won't be motivated. If I didn't have anger, why would I work for righting injustice and protecting myself? I need to be angry. And I need to hold on to my anger for years and years and years. For that person who insulted me 15 years ago, I need to still be angry. Otherwise, I won't be safe. I need my lust. Otherwise, I would desert my family. I need my greed, or I wouldn't work hard every day. I need my envy. Otherwise, I wouldn't try to compete with others and try to be excellent in my work. I need my fears to keep me safe. It's something like an abusive relationship where somebody's beating you, but they're also paying your bills. So this is a very serious problem. Now this problem is a little bit more subtle than the pride in speech, because this is usually pertaining to secret actions. Again, remember, this is a padati. This verse is about people who have this jewel of transcendental sound. They are speaking about spiritual things. And they have all these other wonderful qualities from the first three verses. So they're not going to be openly doing wicked things. Therefore, this is a kind of hypocrisy. Raghunath Das Goswami says, to get free of this, we remember the cheating crane. So crane stands on one leg, right? Stands on one leg with his eyes closed in meditation like a great yogi. Until there comes along a fish. And then again, yogi. So therefore, the crane is the personification or epitome of hypocrisy. Now, interestingly enough, Raghunath Das Goswami does not say to ask for the help of Krishna the killer Abaka. In verse 4, he did say to go to the service of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. So for the problem of speech, he tells us to go to Krishna and the service mood of Vrindavan. For this problem, He doesn't say go to Krishna, the killer of Baka. Krishna kills this shape-shifting wizard who personifies hypocrisy. Rather, he says, call for the help of the devotees of the killer of Bhakti. Maybe we can have the lights off for a minute so we can see this. This is our painting for this verse. And we put this painting here because Bhaktivinoda has a prayer in his commentary specifically for Bhishma and Arjuna and Narada Muni. Now, of course, when we ask for the help of the devotees of the killer of Baka, they don't have to be devotees on this level. It just has to be anyone who themselves is free from hypocrisy. So anyone who's a step higher than us. Okay, you can turn the lights back. When we call for the help of these devotees of the killer of Baka, they release us from these ropes. Now, if you think about it, this requires some giving up of pride. Now, why is that? Because generally a person who's this far on the path will be saying, I'm divine, Prabhu. I don't have any problems at all. Everything's going wonderfully in my bhakti. Right? I mean, to be able to say, help! I'm being killed by my own lust and anger. Help! That requires some humility, especially when it's involving going to the devotees. So how is it that this solves the problem? Well, first of all, if we go to devotees who are themselves free from these enemies, then we get a lot of faith. We say, oh, this person isn't maintaining lust and anger and envy and greed and fear, and they're still happy. They're still motivated. Right? They're fighting against injustice, and they're safe, and they're responsible, even though they don't have these enemies pulling them around. Also, we get a model from them as to how to behave. We see how do they behave without these enemies, and we say, oh, I can do that. And of course, they also free us by their instructions. And then our heart becomes like a crystal stone that reflects their qualities. So many devotees think that this must be the end of the path. At this point, we have attachment to the holy name, Gayatri, Guru, Krishna, the holy Dham. We're making an effort. We're working at giving up pride. Right? We don't have an identity of Dharma or Adharma. We have an identity of Krishna's agent, the right relationship with Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. Right? We're patient life after life, following Rupa, Sanatan, and Swarup Damodar to awaken our rasa. And we have this jewel of transcendental sound absorbed in the service mood of Vrindavan. And here we have the problem of action, which is like thieves with ropes, and our solution is to ask for help from our police officers, the devotees who are free from hypocrisy. We have now become what the GBC laws say is a devotee in good standing. Our actions now, at this point in the path, are pukka. Okay. We have this jewel of transcendental sound, and our actions are protected by the police officers on the edge of the path. And I've had people argue with me and say, surely that's all we have to do. Raghunath Das Goswami says, yes, that's very nice. One's eliminated pride in speech, talking about ourselves, this world, and liberation. The pride of action, that I can secretly engage in all these forbidden things on the plea of needing those motivations. But what about the mind? cheta prodyat kapata kutinati bhadakara sharan mutresnat vadahasi katam atmanamapimam sada tvam gandharva giridhara pada prema vilasat sudam bodhausnatva tvam api nitaramam cha sukaya. O ruffian mind, why do you burn yourself and me, the soul, by bathing in the trickling urine of the great donkey of full-blown hypocrisy and duplicity? Instead, you should always bathe in the ocean of love emanating from the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gandharvika Giridhari, thereby delighting yourself and me. Well, here's the stick. Remember I told you he was going to get out the stick? Anybody remember verse 1, how Raghunath Das Goswami talked to his mind? Brother, holding your feet, I beseech you with sweet words, right? That was verse 1. And here he's got out a stick, ruffian mind. Why? Because this is a problem of the mind. This is a pride of the mind. With our actions, we try to deceive others, but this is about deceiving ourselves. Bhaktivinoda says in his commentary that on the external level, the six enemies are dead by the shining path of bhakti. And we're thinking, I'm getting clean. I have this jewel of transcendental sound. I'm protected by the police officers on the shining path with my actions. I'm doing the right things. And I'm getting so purified. And Raghunath Das Goswami says, you better look up and see what is your shower. It might be the rear end of a very big donkey. So how do we know if we have this problem? He says, if we have this problem, the sensation we feel will be burning. It won't be burning. If we are doing, you know, not 100% perhaps, but if we're basically doing everything right, our actions are right, our speech is right, but our mind's not happy. Our mind's not filled with peace and joy. That's the symptom that we have this problem. Now, when devotees have this problem, they tend to have certain responses to it. One response is to say, well, I guess bhakti isn't working. If I'm doing the activities of bhakti and the sounds of bhakti, but my mind is still not full of peace and joy, there must be something wrong with bhakti. So they give up the activities of bhakti more or less. They start decreasing their activities of bhakti. They go back under the control of the thieves. Or sometimes they just become resigned. They say, well, I guess this is as good as it gets. Maybe at the time of death there'll be a miracle, and at least for now I can eat prasadam. Or they blame somebody. They say, well, if I'm doing the activities of bhakti and I'm filling my life with transcendental sound and I'm still not peaceful and joyful, it must be the fault of somebody else in the Hare Krishna movement. And the people that tend to get blamed, who gets blamed? The leaders, especially. A lot of the people who have an ongoing habit of blaming leadership, not all of them, of course, are people with this problem. Other persons they blame tend to be their intimates. You know, their husband, their wife, their child, the head of the brahmachari ashram, somebody that they're very close to. That tends to be the response. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to give us three categories of devotees and ways in which each of them can be bathing in donkey urine. What I found is that the items he lists are not only for those groups, they can be applied in general. So his first category is called the Swanista Sadaka. These are people who are not renunciates, but they're working full-time in bhakti. They don't have a job or a business in the world. You can see here, we've shown this symbolically, that Radha Krishna are supplying all their necessities directly. So these people can bathe in donkey urine when, in the name of service, they just want to enjoy their senses. By the way, this can not only be on a gross platform, but also on a subtle platform. Sometimes we do service just for the sake of our ego, right? In other words, it's not really a mood of service. You understand? Right? You're doing service, but that's not your mood. Your mood is, I want to get some enjoyment out of this service. That's the actual motivation. Now, this is quite common. Giving a lot of attention to people who are rich or famous or influential and neglecting humble devotees. So after my mother died, I got a small inheritance and I gave some of it to a temple for their goshal. Then when I went to visit, they gave me big, you know, welcome and prasadam and garlands and everything. And I said, I don't have any more. And the next time I went, I was ignored. And, you know, we have one devotee who does a survey every year of how temples greet guests and how they answer the phone. And he found that 44% of temples, nobody answers the phone, nobody says hello to guests. You know, and we see this sometimes, right? Some VIP comes and it's all there, and the humble devotees, nobody even says Hari Bol. That is this problem. Meditating on material wealth and opulence. This is a very common problem, wanting to win arguments instead of to find the truth, and therefore twisting logic rather than relying on the scriptures. This is a very common problem. This one we used to see, especially in the 70s, and you still see it in some places, artificially taking up the renounced ashram for prestige. So especially we had people doing this in the 70s, and you still find some places where people like try to stay in the brahmachari ashram until they're 45 and they crack, just because they think it's more prestigious. All right, then we have the Parinista Sadhikas. So this is the vast majority of devotees. These are people who are not renunciates, and they're following the normal etiquette of the world. And here we're showing Radha Krishna symbolically maintaining them through the briefcase. So they can bathe in donkey urine by putting on a show of being very strict, but having all kinds of subtle material attachments. This is another interesting one, by preferring the association of non-devotees, which we've symbolized here as the karmis, the jnanis, and the yogis. And here's a devotee, just, I guess I don't belong here. And I saw this, I was in one city where a devotee couple had four or five restaurants, and I said, oh, you must be distributing a lot of prasadam. And they said, no, it's not prasadam, it's just vegetarian. I said, why is that? They said, well, it's too much trouble to hire devotee cooks. Oh, really? They said, yeah, you know those devotees. Oh, it's Kartik, I'll be back in 2 months. Right? Or how come you didn't show up at work yesterday? Oh, you know, my Guru Maharaj was here. Or I'm going to leave early today. It's Narottama Das Thakur's disappearance day. I want to go home and sing songs. And I said, you know, I'd just rather hire non-devotees. Then we have the Nirapekshas. These are your brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. So they bathe in donkey urine when they think that being in a renounced ashram is equivalent to being advanced in bhakti. Now, I must frankly say that in our Hare Krishna movement, we encourage this kind of donkey urine bathing. You know, I just in my inbox today had an email from a devotee saying, you know, yes, we know there are very advanced devotees in our movement, like sannyasis, who are personally speaking with Krishna. And I said, Prabhu, it's not that only the sannyasis in our movement are advanced. First of all, it's not that just being a sannyasi makes you advanced. And second of all, it's not that not being a sannyasi doesn't make you advanced. Some of you may have seen that article recently about the devotee Padasevanam Devi Dasi. Some of you read that? So there's this elderly lady from one of the CIS countries. She's personally talking with Krishna. So we have that, we have very advanced devotees that have, husband and children and are working out and professionally in the world. And they've actually have realization of Krishna consciousness. So this equating of an external, like the renounced ashram, with spiritual advancement. Mistreatment of those who aren't in the renounced ashrams. And if you read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, this was particularly a problem in 75 and 76. There's a chapter called, the Sannyas Grihastha Wars. So we don't see this so much anymore. But in some places, we see mistreatment of families, women and children, and so forth. Accumulating more goods and money that could ever be used for service. This is a problem in every religion, that in the name of preaching, just wanting to attract members of the opposite sex. This one is also quite common, that in order to get money, neglecting one's sadhana or neglecting one's principles. And again, we see this can become institutionalized. Oh, it's all right if you don't have time to read Prabhupada's books because you have to collect money for the new temple. Or one temple I knew that in order to make money, they rented out part of the building to a gambling casino. So anytime that we are neglecting our own basic sadhana or our own principles for the idea of making money or being successful in the world. This one is also quite common, externally doing service, but internally meditating on material things. This is, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, I don't have enough money. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, I need a new car. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, there's a very pretty girl. This kind of problem. Now this next one was a little difficult to illustrate. We've illustrated it as if it's a gross problem. Actually, it's a subtle problem. So we've shown here his beads are on the floor and the altar is neglected and the books are on the floor and so forth. But this is really about someone who's interested in the externals and who measures bhakti by the externals. So, if I have really first-class tilak and my clothes are all iron silk, exactly pleated in the right way, and I know all the mudras and I have perfect Sanskrit pronunciation, then I am a devotee. And losing the internal mood of devotion. Then in this picture, those of you who have a book, can find this one on page 119. So here you'll notice, and those of you on the internet, if you have the American printing, it would be in a different page number. You'll notice in the beginning here, there's a box. Yes, everybody see the box with a lock on it? And what's inside the box? Hearts. Yes, one devotee thought they were cookies. So this is when we're not engaging our emotions in devotional service. I mean, one devotee came up to me in the last few months and said, Urmila, I want to make sure that I don't become sentimental. So I'm just doing my service on the philosophical and rational platform. And I said, Prabhu, then you're doing Gyan Yoga. Bhakti is about involving our emotions and our desires in bhakti. So if we're just doing the activities of bhakti and we're not involving our emotions, then we have this problem. Can anybody tell me what is the common thread between all of these kinds of donkey urine baths? What is the same about all of them? Selfishness, good. What else? Huh? Hypocrisy, but this hypocrisy to ourselves, not to others.
They're all for show.
Huh? They're all for show. Yes. So should I tell you my own donkey urine story? It's a little embarrassing, but I've already told it before, and it's already all over, I've already recorded it, so it's kind of too late. So as many of you know, that I spent about 27 years working with children's education in the Hare Krishna movement. And Srila Prabhupada says that our Gurukula is the most important project. So my mood was, I am working in Srila Prabhupada's most important project. You start to see the problem right there? Okay. But that wasn't the worst of it. That was the minor part of it. So we have a difficulty in our Hare Krishna movement with children's education. I mean, I'm very happy to see here in this temple the children are very included in the temple. I think at Mangal Arati this morning we had about 40 people and about 5 of them were children. So that was very enlivening. And frankly, you don't see that too many places. So we've definitely had a problem in our movement of under-resourcing our children's education. For example, in Prabhupada's centennial, there was this lotus. Each petal was an area of ISKCON, and there was no petal for education. When the GBC set up their standing committees, there was no committee for education. It took them 2 years to make a committee for education, and that was only after pressure. When the strategic planning team of North America listed 17 ways in which ISKCON contributes to the world, they did not list anything for education. When I was just in South Africa, I saw all the posters for ISKCON's 50th anniversary, maybe 15, 20 posters. There was no poster about education. And there was one poster that said, Prabhupada started temples, farms, and restaurants. And I thought, and schools? Now, there was one mention of schools on the charity poster. So the poster that said that ISKCON does charity work, that we give food to the poor, there it said, we start schools. So, and in the one temple where my husband and I started a school, the temple authorities at one point wanted to do a fundraiser. So they were going to do a fundraising dinner, $100 a plate, and they had a display at the event all about the deity worship, another display about prasadam distribution, another display about books. They wanted a display about Gurukulas. I asked my husband and I to put together a display about Gurukula. They raised $100,000. How much money of that do you think went to the Gurukula? What do you think? What do you think?
None.
You are correct. So I had a mood, okay, I had a mood that I'm working for Srila Prabhupada's most important project, and the money and the manpower, the resources that are going to the temples, that a lot of that should instead be going to the schools. Now, by the way, that's actually true. It should be. But my mood was, why is the money going to the temples? It should be going to the schools, which is Prabhupada's most important project. Do you start to see the problem? Do you start to see the problem? Now, this feeling that I had, that, you know, the money and the resources should go to the schools, which is Prabhupada's most important project, it shouldn't all be going to the temples, that was, for me, I thought, this is my dedication to Srila Prabhupada. Are you all following me? I did not see it as a problem. In fact, not only did I not see it as a problem, I saw it as the very best part of myself. I thought, okay, I go to Mangal Arati, but everybody goes to Mangal Arati. In those days, everybody went to Mangal Arati. I chant my rounds, everybody chants their rounds, but I've got this dedication that I want the resources to go to Gurukula. Now, let's see how many of you remember the beginning of this verse. How do you think I experienced that dedication? What do you think it felt like to me?
Burning,
very good. It felt like it was burning. Do you think I had peace and joy in my mind? Not much. I had a lot of burning. But I thought that was a good thing. If anybody said, how do you feel? I'd say, I feel a fire of dedication. Really, I would say that. So do you think I ever could have figured out what the problem was on my own? I couldn't have figured out what the problem was because I was disguising it. And in fact, Bhakti Vinod, in his song, those of you here yesterday remember that we've published here Bhakti Vinod's songs on the verses, which have never been published before. If any of you have a book, you can open up. This is on page 124. He says, aside from desire, anger, and the other thieves, there is one subtler enemy of yours. His name is deceit and is also known as insincerity. That enemy is a tricky enemy and is in the form of a donkey. My dear mind, please try to understand the deeper essence. You are joyfully bathing in this donkey's urine by mistake, thinking it to be something pure. Whether you live in a forest or at home, keep away from that donkey whose urine burns both you and me. Let's escape the charm of our own duplicity and sportingly bathe in the beautiful ocean of the divine couple's sweet love. So this donkey urine bath charms us. We think it's purifying us. We think it's cleaning us. What is the solution? Raghunath Das Goswami says, ruffian mind, go bathe in the ocean of love. What does that mean? He says this ocean of love is at the feet of Gandharvika and Giridhari. Now you remember, for the problem of speech, he told us to take shelter of Radha and Krishna. For the problem of the thieves, he tells us to take shelter of the devotees. For this problem, he tells us to bathe in the ocean of love. Now, I actually did that inadvertently with that problem. I said to Krishna one day, I said, my dear Lord, you have been teaching me so many things through suffering. Have you learned many good things through suffering? Yes? And I said to him, look, I'm ready to learn in another way. I said, you know, look, I'm a teacher. I have more than one teaching method. You must have more than one teaching method, too. Let's try the ecstatic method. Now, what was important about what I said was the next thing. I said, my dear Lord, whatever I need to learn, I promise you I will learn. You won't have to get out a stick. I promise you, if you teach me in a sweet way, that I will immediately learn it. That was the thing that I did that was right, without really understanding that. And then Krishna put me in a wonderfully ecstatic service, where in order to do the service, I had to confront this problem. He basically put me in an incredible service where I had to fundraise for a temple. and I wasn't able to do it. But the service was so ecstatic that I wanted to do it. And therefore I had to confront what was actually going on. Now, instead of dedication, what did I really have? You don't have to be afraid to tell me, because I already know. So what did I really have instead of dedication? What was it really? You don't have to be shy, really.
Passion.
It was definitely passion. What specifically? It was pride, but that was the minor one. What was the major one? It was definitely anger, yes. Definitely pride and anger, for sure. There was actually quite a lot of anger. And what else? What was the big, big, big one? Well, it's all false ego, yeah. But specifically? Envy. It was primarily envy. Primarily envy with quite a bit of anger and pride. And Krishna showed me your dedication, your so-called dedication, is envy. You know, envy is the main course, and you've got anger and pride as your side courses. And so we're going to go through just very simply a four-part system here, based on the Bhagavad Gita, of what does Raghunath Das Goswami mean when he says that we should bathe in the ocean of love. So here, verse 6. This is about pride of the mind, right? And it's compared to a bath in donkey urine. And the cure is to bathe in the ocean of love. So I understand that this bathing in the ocean of love really has four parts to it, based on the Bhagavad Gita. So the first thing you do is what I did right, kind of incidentally, and it's also what Arjuna did in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna also had this problem. He said, Lord Krishna, I'm doing everything right. I'm respecting my elders. I'm taking care of the women, right? I'm not greedy for the kingdom. I'm doing everything right, because over here is action. Yes? Right? The verse we just did with the thieves was about action. So Arjuna said, my actions are all good. I don't have a problem with my actions. But my skin is burning. Right? I'm burning. And he said, Krishna, therefore I Surrender. So the first thing is you ask Krishna. You say to Krishna, tell me what the real problem is. Tell me what the real problem is. And again, that's what I kind of did without knowing that that's what I should do. Krishna, what is the real problem? Now that's a little scary because all of us want truth, right? That's why we're here. That's why we're here instead of somewhere else. We want the absolute truth. But it's a little different to say, my dear Lord, please tell me the truth about myself. It's not quite so easy, you know. I want to see the absolute truth, but not about me. So, usually we also have to ask for some courage to be able to say, Krishna, whatever you show me, I'm going to listen. So ask Krishna to show truth and ask him for the courage to see it, believe it, and act on it. The next thing is what Krishna does. So he shows you. And Krishna shows two things side by side. Like Krishna showed Arjuna the nature of the soul, the nature of God, and the nature of Maya, didn't he? Yes? The nature of the soul, Nahanyate Hanumane Shri Re, the nature of God, Ahamsarvastya Prabhupada, the nature of Maya, right? Three modes of material nature, demoniac nature. Shows both side by side. Then after Krishna shows everything to Arjuna, then what does he say? He says, I've shown you everything, now you choose. I met one Indian gentleman once who told me that was his favorite verse in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, Urmila, I do that every day, where Krishna says, now you do whatever you like. So the third step is to choose, because Krishna doesn't take away our free will. So when Krishna shows us truth and illusion side by side, you have to choose. Now that choosing is hard. The choosing is hard. Arjuna found it hard. He said, Krishna, if I do what you're telling me to do, so many terrible things will happen. The women will be unprotected. I'm going to go to hell. I won't even enjoy the kingdom anyway. Right? You understand? So many terrible things will happen. And it'll be too hard. This system of yoga you're teaching me, Krishna, it's much too hard. What happens to people who fail? Do they become like a little lost cloud? They've given up their material life and they don't get spiritual life ever. So, my dear friends, Maya seems to have a very standard script. The script that our mind will give us is going to have different details than what was given to Arjuna, but it's the same basic thing. Terrible things will happen and it'll be too hard. And occasionally there's a few others like, oh, if you just keep chanting, it'll go away by itself, or something like that. But those are the two main things. Terrible things will happen, it'll be too hard. And what one has to do is just say, oh, ruffian mind, stop bathing in this ocean of this trickle of donkey urine, you burning up fool. And just choose Krishna. Fourth step. Krishna gives what we choose. Now, it's interesting. I just had the great privilege, the very great privilege and honor to be right there in the room when a devotee did this. When a devotee was going through a lot of anxiety, this burning sensation in the mind, even though the devotee felt they were doing everything right. And finally, the burning got so great, this devotee went to Krishna and said, help me. And Krishna immediately showed what was the problem. And then the mind chimed in and said, terrible things will happen and it will be too hard. And this devotee chose Krishna anyway. And then the devotee turned to me and said, I feel as if the whole universe has been taken off my shoulders. I am filled with peace and joy. I've never felt anything like this before in my life. And I said, this is a devotee who's been to this seminar. And so I looked at that devotee and said, what did you just do? And the devotee said, I just took a bath in the ocean of love. Can we turn off the light for a minute? This is our painting for this verse. a bath in the ocean of love at the feet of Gandharvika and Kiridhati. So at this point, certainly this must be the end of the path. At this point, we have a jewel of transcendental sound. Our lives are filled with this jewel of transcendental sound. We're protected by the police officers on the path. Our actions are pakka, and our mind is swimming in an ocean of love. There is peace and joy in our heart. And Raghunath Das Goswami says, very nice, but what about the heart? Pratishta Shadrista Swapacha Ramani Me Ridinatet Katam Sadhu Prema Spir Shati Suchir Etananumanaha Sada Twam Sevasva Prabhudayita Samantamatulam Yata Tam Niskasya Twaitamihatam Beshayatisa. As long as the unchaste dog-eating woman of desire for prestige dances in my heart, how can the chaste and pure lady of love for Krishna touch it? Therefore, O mind, you should always serve the incomparable, beloved devotee commander of Krishna's army, who will immediately throw out the unchaste woman and establish the pure lady of love in the heart. I've got this jewel of transcendental sound. I'm protected by the police officers in my action, and my mind is swimming in an ocean of love. Oh, there must be a party going on in my heart. Raghunath Das Goswami says, you better see who's at that party and what they're serving for dinner. Maybe what's on the plate is a dead dog. This dog represents honor and praise. I mean, a dog is food. People eat it, but it's not exactly very nice food, is it? The problem, though, isn't so much the dead dog. It's this lady. She's the desire to eat the dead dog. She's unfaithful. Why unfaithful? Well, we want to enjoy honor and praise. We only stay around people who are praising us. As soon as somebody corrects us, then we leave that place, isn't it? And you see in the back, there's these nice ladies. These are the sadhu prema. Raghunath Das Goswami uses the feminine form of the word prema, prema. And they don't want to go into this heart. Like I know sometimes I've been in a shopping mall and I see something in a window that would be useful, but when I start to go in the store, they're playing awful music. And so I just don't go in the store. And it's like that, the ladies of love, they want to enter the heart of a devotee who's already come to this point. But not with that stinky dog and the wild lady in there. In his song on this verse, Bhaktivinoda says that the unfaithful woman has a lover. She has a boyfriend, and his name is Pretense and Deceit. And why is that? Because when we want to be honored, we will not be honest. We will always present ourselves as being a little better than, or a lot better than we really are. This desire for honor, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, here we have trophies. If you want to look closely, if you have a book. This is on page 132. So this desire for honor, he says, is the root of the tree of pretentiousness. Here we have all these masks on the tree. And Bhaktivinoda warns us. He said, if you get to this point on the path and you don't get rid of this desire for honor, the donkey urine, the thieves, the prostitute, and the tigress can return. We have seen this. We have seen devotees who advanced to a very high level but didn't give up the desire for honor and fell back down. At this point on the path, what do you think a devotee wants to be honored for? Yes. Exactly. for being an advanced devotee. You know, at this point, a devotee realizes I'm not going to be God. They're not trying to be God anymore. But at least I can be a saintly person. At least I can be a senior devotee, right? Bhaktivinoda says the householders want to be honored for being very kind, very religious, being very sinless, a devotee of Vishnu, knowing spiritual subjects, being very detached. I remember my husband and I were very proud of the fact that we had no furniture. He says the renunciates, they want to be honored for being renounced, right? Oh, you only have two dhotis. For being a master of the Shastra conclusions and having a perfect understanding of devotion. I had one devotee recently say to me, Urmila, I'm the only one who really understands bhakti and rasa from the Shastras. And I thought, oh, that's the dead dog. So there's this very famous verse that the girl named Praise has never gotten married because the sadhus don't want to marry her and she doesn't want to marry the demons. How does one remove this desire for honor from the heart? Raghunath Das Goswami says, we have to serve the generals in Krishna's army. Only they can remove this desire for the heart. So we had the problem with speech, you go to loving service for Krishna. The problem with the thieves, you go to the devotees who are free from hypocrisy. For the donkey urine, you go to Krishna to bathe in the ocean of love at the feet of Gandharvika Giridhari. For this problem, for honor, again to the devotees. But here one needs a very powerful devotee. Here one needs the great generals in Krishna's army. They throw this desire out of the heart. Then Krishna himself cleans the heart. At that point, the heart becomes like a beautiful city into which the chaste lady of love will enter. So what do you think? Is that nice? Would we like that? So how does this work? Well, as I said, at this point, we're trying to be the saintly person. Instead of that, we serve the saintly person. Now, this desire for recognition is not altogether bad in a sense. Prabhupada writes in Krishna book in reference to Akura that one who does not seek to be recognized by Krishna is condemned. Therefore, we move that desire for honor and praise to being wanting to be recognized by Krishna. Now, do you think Krishna is going to recognize us for being a saintly person? What do you think? It's not going to happen with me, I'll tell you that. Krishna's not going to recognize me, oh, you're so pure and saintly. What is Krishna going to recognize us for?
Humility.
Humility, especially service for the devotees. And that recognition by Krishna, well done, good and faithful servant, thank you for serving my devotees, is so sweet that we will lose the desire for the honor of the world. Is the honor of the world genuine? When we get honor from other jivas for being a saintly person, is that genuine? Is that genuine? Is it? Is it?
No.
No. I know, it's a weekday and it's almost 9 o'clock.
Is it what?
But once we get that recognition from Krishna, then we lose all desire for the false things of the world. So how do we serve the generals in Krishna's army? Bhaktivinoda says through embraces, through taking the dust of their feet, through taking the remnants of their food, this is child Narada, through taking the water that has washed their feet, and then the spiritual potency will flow from their hearts to our hearts. Then the chaste ladies of love, let me turn the light off for a minute, the chaste ladies of love will enter the heart. So this painting is of the gopis getting dressed for the pleasure of the Lord. So this is what our heart will look like once this unfaithful woman of the desire for prestige, her boyfriend of pretense, and the dead dog of honor are out of the heart. So just turn the light again. So here we have the final obstacle of pride. And this is in verse 7. This is the problem of the heart, which we have the dead dog and the dancing unfaithful woman. And this is cured by serving the generals, by serving the great saints. So these were all different levels of pride, giving up pride in sound, where I'm using sound just to glorify myself, my own enjoyments, my own desire for liberation, giving up the pride of action, which is that I can do things that are wrong on the side, the pride of the mind, that while we're ostensibly doing bhakti, actually we're holding on to so many wrong things in our mind, and the pride of the heart, that yes, I am such a great devotee swimming in the ocean of love in my mind, and everybody else should recognize that and honor me for it. Okay, so thank you very much for staying tonight through the heart surgery. I did warn you that it was going to be a little... I warned you, right? Yes? I did warn you all that it was going to be a little heavy today. Tomorrow it gets sweet again. So tomorrow we'll be doing the first verse. We'll be doing tomorrow, verse 8, is the turning point in Manashiksha. And then we have the verses of the steps having achieved perfection. But everything we'll discuss tomorrow is also applicable to the beginners in bhakti. And it's just a wonderful meditation on Krishna and the spiritual world. Please, 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 tomorrow bring songbooks. If you have a songbook or if there's songbooks in the temple, you're going to be doing an activity with songs, and you might also want to bring paper and pencil. So again, thank you very much. Raghunath Das Goswami ki jai. Bhakti Vinod Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.